Since the 1800s, Hickok & Boardman Insurance Group has been providing quality service and peace of mind to our clients. With our offices in Burlington, Stowe, and St. Albans, and our Dennis Ricker & Brown offices in Montpelier and Lynnonville, we are here when you need us.
It's time for Radio Vermont News and Public Affairs Program Open Mic with Hester Fuller. The phone lines to speak with Hester are open at 802-244-1777 and toll-free at 1-877-291-8255. And here's your host, Hester Fuller.
Thank you very much, Tom. Good morning, everybody, and a happy Monday morning to one and all. Busy news morning this morning, and we will be staying on top of the breaking news out of New York City this morning in connection with the various explosive devices that have been found and that went off over the last day or two in that general area. I'd love to hear what your thoughts are on current events, that or other ones, 244-1777 or 1-877-291-8255. Busy weekend for many people. I guess we're going to be kissing summer goodbye by the end of the week. I can't believe it. Just seems to be coming up too darn quickly. I know some folks who are actually planning to go out and tag their Christmas trees within the next couple of weeks. And to me, that really, really seems like jumping the gun. Don't you think, Tom?
I had not heard that people did it. I heard early July, like craft fairs, Christmas bazaars in July, but wow.
I know. It just seems, I'm just not ready for that yet. I'm still deep in my summer mind, still trying to haul in all the tomatoes out of my garden, still trying to just suck the last little bit out of summertime. It just seems really too soon to be doing that. But, you know, Vermonters are nothing but on the ball, you know, getting ahead of things. We'd like to know what you did with your beautiful last weekend of full summer, or are you going to treat it as not quite the last weekend? Give us a call at 244-1777 or 877-291-8255. Campaign trail was not quiet this weekend. Mr. Trump, again, making headlines and attracting attention. And generally, the media is conceding they were played by this fellow over the weekend. He had his big so-called press conference, held it in, the lobby of his brand new fancy hotel in Washington. Great free publicity there. Dropped yet another birther bomb, which I don't want to dwell on here, but it just seems like more and more the media are kind of digging themselves into a hole with this guy, and I'm just kind of wondering when they're going to stop falling for it and when we're going to start hearing more actual attention to real news that this guy is making, not necessarily favorable to his campaign. We've heard an awful lot about potential influence peddling on the other side of the aisle. And now, of course, we have the story breaking about his attempts to pay off a person in Florida to give certain permissions to Trump University. Interestingly enough, the case against Trump University seemed to go away after a $25,000 payment was made to, I've just lost the woman's name, the Attorney General. So there's plenty to be seen down out on the campaign trail this morning, and lots to be discussed about our current situation. And I see the Bill from Barry is never slow to hop on the train here. Good morning, Bill. How are you today?
Good morning, Hester. Well, I think I had a pretty good weekend.
Good.
Saturday was beautiful. I guess Friday was too. The sky was blue.
Wasn't it?
I'm saying that for a reason. I really wanted to call you, talk about what happened in New Jersey and New York and in Minnesota. But first, I wanted to bring up something nice. I was coming out of the East Barry post office where I pick up the mail, and I looked down the road towards Westerville, and I saw this bright yellow bunch of bushes or trees or plants. So I had my camera. So I went over there, and they were sunflowers.
Oh, nice.
And so I took some pictures, and I have friends. And sunflowers grow, they're native to North America, and they grow in every state in the Union, different varieties maybe, but they grow everywhere. And I have friends that live in Florida and the Carolinas, Virginia, and also out west. And, so I sent them a couple of pictures of like one sunflower, and I would say, this is my estimate, that the blossom was over 10 inches in diameter.
Wow.
Like I looked up in the internet, and there's been some, it didn't make the Guinness Book of Records. They've got them 20 inches.
Now, were these, Bill, let me ask you, were these just volunteer sunflowers popping up by the side of the road kind of randomly, or do you think somebody put them
there? No. They, I think, were well fertilized. Mm. They were in the backyard.
Okay.
The backyard went from the street next over back to Websterville Road, the main road from East Barry to Websterville. And I saw them from there, and I could just go get off the road a little bit. They were about maybe 20 feet, not even 20 feet, in from the, yeah, in from the street itself. But no, they were well taken care of.
That's
no
great.
No question about that.
Well, it's cheery to see those this time of year.
Anyway, I sent them to my friend and told him that I had to actually point the camera up to take the pictures.
They were that tall, huh?
They were that tall.
That's tremendous.
So I'd say 8 feet tall. And the beautiful thing was the sky was deep blue and the yellow sunflowers. It was when I got home, put them on my computer, I said, I'm going to send it to my friend.
That's fantastic. I bet they look spectacular.
Well, so we have something. I asked them if they could match that. This is Vermont. Little Vermont has big flowers. Can you guys match it?
Well, we'll be interested to hear maybe next week what they're able to send back to you.
Yes.
But you said you had some thoughts about the news of the day. What are your thoughts?
Now, we had bombings in New Jersey and New York City, and we had knifings in Minnesota, north of St. Paul, Minneapolis. And in all those cases, we here in Vermont, of course, we got crime and stuff happening here, and we have one of the least strict gun control laws.
Mm-hmm.
And all these crimes, or these crimes that happened, were not guns, but they were, except for the knife, illegal weapons. Illegal weapons, the bombs, that have to be sort of sophisticated. I cannot make a bomb. And we also know that people can get guns illegally. It costs them more than if they go to a gun store, but that can happen. The people that sell drugs or ship drugs or smuggle drugs into the country also smuggle guns. So, and the thing that happened in Minnesota is a policeman who was not on duty, but who, and I got to say this, he knew how to use a gun because he was a policeman. He knew what to do. He knew how to do it. And he saved lives. I think gun control should be fought very hard before you say that innocent people, citizens like many of us who've been in the service, know how to use them, should not be have our guns ever taken away from us.
Well, I think that you are not alone in that opinion. I'm not aware of anyone who wants to take anybody's guns away, but I think you're certainly not alone. I think that's one of the reasons we do have protections built into the U.S. Constitution. It's been a rough news weekend, particularly in those states south of us, and even the Amtrak trains, I guess, were slowed up and. Sorry about that. Even the Amtrak trains were canceled and put on, or not canceled, excuse me, just slowed up while train stations were searched in the wake of the discoveries in Elizabeth, New Jersey. And I know we have plenty of people in our region that travel up and down there frequently, and I know that that's of interest to them. We're going to be keeping a close eye on what's going on with that developing story out of New York. Thank you, Bill, for giving us a call from Barry. Anybody else out there with thoughts on the news of the day, give us a call, 244-1777 or 877-291-8255. Bill saw some happy things out in the world this weekend, too. We'd love to hear about those. Sunflowers in East Barry? Well, sure. I've got a few that just volunteered right up out of my compost pile, and it's just really, really happy to see them there. Really, they brighten up the fall. They brighten up the backyard. They certainly brighten up the compost pile. And we'll say that, too. Lots of stuff happening. What other things are on your mind this morning? Are you worried about what's happening in the election? Are you worried about the trending numbers that we're starting to see? Votes in the Electoral College versus popular vote. Who's running ahead? Who's running behind? What are your thoughts about what's going on there? What do you think needs to happen between now and early November to have things turn out the way you hope they turn out? closer to home, we also hear that the opioid lobby is turning up as trying to exert some influence in Montpelier. That was on the Free Press, I think, was it yesterday? Yeah. No, actually, it's this morning. Opioid lobby seeking to influence decisions made in Montpelier. What's that all about? What do you think? Give us a call, 244-1777 or 1-877-291-8255. We'd like to hear from you.
All right. Sounds very good. Do you want me to do a break?
Oh, I thought that's what we were doing. Okay, no, sure.
Yes, usually when you do that, you say, now open.
You're right.
So I just was checking.
I'm a little slow this morning.
Well, that's okay. It's a Monday. You got to have some of that jet fuel coffee.
I will try some of that. I've got to go over there and see J.D. Green and see if he has any more of that wonderful, powerful stuff.
I think he does.
Let's pause and do a little business, why don't we, Tom? Thanks very much for that.
Sounds good.
Good morning and welcome back. Hester Fuller is my name. You are listening to Open Mic Radio on WDEV, our every morning call-in public affairs program. 244-1777, 1-877-291-8255. We'll put you in touch. We'll put you on the air here on Open Mic. Really interesting, thoughtful piece in the Washington Post not too long ago, this weekend actually, Donald Trump's dumping consistently on Hillary Clinton and her work with the Clinton Foundation and the intimations that there has been influence buying in that way. It was reported last week that Mr. Trump himself and his foundation made an illegal political contribution to the Attorney General in Florida, Pam Bondi. And coincidentally or not, after she cashed that check, she decided that she would not pursue allegations that the Trump University outfit had defrauded students in Florida. I have not heard a whole lot of attention paid to that story. Have you, Tom? It just seems like it's floating out there, and you'd think they would be all over this, but they're not.
Well, it does get announced, but then it doesn't seem to go anywhere.
That's right. They just rush right back to the media circus that is the Trump campaign to see what new outrageous thing he's going to be.
He just doesn't
next.
Seem to have things don't seem to stick, mm-hmm. and if they do, just for a week or two, and then evaporates.
Yeah, well, the Washington Post has really been on top of this too. They conducted a little investigation of Mr. Trump's own foundation, and discovered that it really doesn't operate like a foundation typically does. He often will solicit donations from other people, and then he pretends to write checks out of his own pocket to various causes. Gets his picture taken with handing over giant checks to other people that aren't even his money. And occasionally he'll even use those funds to buy stuff at supposed charity auctions, but they are personal things that he would like to own for himself, and the foundation spends its money on them. And for some reason, inexplicably to me, these things just go unchallenged in the news media. And as you say, Tom, they get their 2 seconds of attention in the media, and then they drop away, and nobody seems to pay any attention to them. They're on off to the next piece of media circus craft.
Some do that, but like you say, some others, though, it's just he has this ability. I don't know if it's just because some of his supporters don't care about what he does. They just like a change. Now, I'm not endorsing that, mm-hmm. but like the Washington Post, there are some that fire away at him, and it doesn't seem to take him down much. He might just have a mm-hmm. slow loss of supporters.
Well, it's certainly, you're right. The stories don't sort of mushroom. They don't catch fire and start snowballing on him the way they do when he decides to float some outrageous remark. And I don't know why that is. I mean, it seems Hillary just has to sneeze, and everybody's all over her. And Mr. Trump can have these little notches in his belt, and nobody pays any attention to them. And it just does not seem right to me.
Well, she does have that I don't know if she handled the pneumonia thing well.
Well, you know, I've been thinking about that. What would you do if you were in the running for the biggest job of your life and your, interview or campus visit or whatever you want to call being on the campaign trail amounts to was underway and you started to not feel so good? What would you do? Would you try to muscle through it, or would you, throw up your hands and say, oh, I have a little sniffle, or I have pneumonia and I have to stop for a bit? What would you do?
Well, I'd get a flu shot. No.
By then it'd be too late.
I think the thing with that is that, here's a call coming in, but I'll talk real quick, is that she does have a trust factor for some, mm-hmm. and they knew about she had pneumonia, which is more than the sniffle. And then the campaign, we don't have to put this necessarily all on Hillary, said they weren't honest about it, and maybe that hurt her in the long run some by not having the disclosure with that trust problem. That's That's one angle I've seen.
Yeah, that is an angle that I've seen, and I guess I'm not sure I really, really agree with it. It just seems to me that if I had pneumonia, I would not be up to the rigorous campaign schedule she's been on, and I just say, go, girl. I think it's just amazing what she's been able to tough out and the way she's been able to power through this. You know, when she was down for the count, there was no way she could not talk about what was ailing her. But boy, oh boy, I really admire her for just trying to stick to it and keep going on the trail and keep going and responding to the criticisms and the racket that she has been dealing with consistently throughout this campaign. Rama from Williamstown, good morning, sir. What's on your mind today?
Well, the Cubs have clinched their division title.
Isn't that great?
So it's getting me kind of worried, though. I mean, the closer we get to them winning the World Series brings us every day closer to the end of the world.
Hey, so. Yeah, I think you're right. Well, you know, as a Boston fan, I totally feel your pain. So.
No, you don't. Post 2000, you guys have won a World Series.
Well, listen, our memories are longer than that.
Wah, wah, wah.
Yeah. No, I'm not crying now. I'm happy. I just can't wait for it to happen to you.
Well, hey, you know, well, I think one of the mistakes in the conversation you were having there about the, oh, my dogs might start barking really
loud here,
about the coverage of the presidential campaign as such as it is you refer to the news media, and we have precious little news media out there anymore. Most of it has been thoroughly absorbed by the entertainment industry. And this also accounts for a lot of Donald Trump's success, despite his total lack of qualifications and all the negatives on him and the fact that he's a totally dishonest individual. He's part of the entertainment industry. He's a favorite child of theirs. And the Republicans have been playing to this entertainment industry bit for quite some time. I mean, it's no mistake that Donald Trump pops up here in the same party that tried to bring us Sarah Palin as a vice president back in 2008. You know, it was this idea that, my gosh, you can just go out there and entertain people and do the shock jock type discussions in public and draw eyes and money to you through that have really kind of destroyed this presidential. They've never really been pretty, but this one has just gotten so ludicrous. Like you say, Donald Trump can say and do anything, and then they kind of yawn about it, except for to cover in some giddy little fashion that, ooh, did you hear what he said? Whereas, I mean, the Clintons have been investigated consistently by all sorts of groups, literally, since 1990, and people need to understand this. This has been going on by government agencies, by the Republican Party, by Republican operatives, by right-leaning groups all over the country, and literally since 1990. And the only thing that has come up against the Clintons to date is the fact that Bill Clinton had an affair while he was president of the United States.
Well, I think there's some who may disagree with that as the only thing that's come up. But if you don't mind, Rama, I want to just cut away just briefly, because a fellow who's been following this news for quite some time, I won't say how long, has just strolled into the studio after a busy weekend down in West Springfield, Massachusetts. Tom Beardsley's with us, and you have some thoughts on this subject.
Well, no,
don't you?
I didn't. That's not what I wanted to talk about.
Oh, okay.
I have
All
other
right.
thoughts.
You have other thoughts.
Interesting conversation last Thursday with Gene Cassidy, who was the president and CEO of the Eastern States Exposition. And he brought up in our private conversation, he didn't say it was confidential or anything like that, so I don't feel as though I'm betraying any confidences. But he said that security was very much on their mind at the Eastern States Exposition, as one would well imagine. Mm-hmm. A lot of people in one place. And he mentioned the attacks in Paris, and he said the city of West Springfield had actually approached the Big Yi and said they would like a number of security measures taken.
Mm-hmm.
And those security measures included things like welding manhole covers down and putting up Jersey barriers all along Riverdale Street, Memorial Avenue, which runs right along the Eastern States Exposition. And that's where most people go to get to the Eastern States Exposition. And he mentioned the price tag of the security measures that they wanted to implement and told me what it was. And it would have been a real burden to the Eastern States Exposition. It's a big company. It's a big institution. But even still, to add those kind of security measures and what he talked about would have been burdensome.
Mm-hmm.
And also he informed them that for this year it was a little bit too late. The point I wanted to get to was it was interesting that he should bring that up, and then a couple of days later there's an attack mm-hmm. in New York City of some sort with improvised explosive devices and also a stabbing out
in Minnesota. It's not clear it's related.
Not at all. But the thing that occurred to me, Hester, in listening to the news over the weekend about those attacks and having had this conversation with Mr. Cassidy is I have to wonder if there might have been some kind of a warning that had gone out because he mm-hmm. said the request from the city of West Springfield was very recently. It was very close to the beginning of the fair that they said they'd like to see some of these security measures put in place. Mm-hmm. They didn't insist on it. They didn't mandate it. But they did bring it up, and they approached the Big E about that. So you have to wonder, when you hear about an attack on Saturday, and I had this conversation with him on Thursday, you wonder if maybe there was some kind of a warning that went out, or maybe that the authorities and the intelligence apparatus of the country might have known something, and maybe chatter.
There's certainly been sort of nonstop surveillance and keeping an ear to the ground on a lot of these things. And we should also point out that problems cropped up not just in New York City in the Chelsea neighborhood or in Elizabeth, New Jersey, but outside the Notre Dame Cathedral in Paris. An ISIS-directed plot was foiled when police arrested three women who allegedly planned to blow up a car there this weekend. And German police this weekend arrested some folks on suspicion of being members of ISIS in Hamburg, Germany. So it's everywhere.
Yeah, and I'm guessing that probably, and I'm sure you would agree with this, over the past 15 years since 9/11, more likely than not, there have been many, many, many incidences mm-hmm. that have been foiled because of intelligence and whatever, and heightened awareness of what's going on in the world around us. And I wonder how much goes by that we never hear about.
I hope it's
day after day after day. I wonder how many times somebody gets arrested or something gets some plot gets broken up somehow, and it goes on, and we never hear about it. Mm-hmm. And all we hear about really are the failures, I suppose, on the part of authorities and intelligence when something does happen. But I wonder if every day, every week, every month, there are episodes that go by that we never hear about.
It brings to mind something I remember from way back in the 70s and 80s when the Irish Republican Army was was making its voice heard mm-hmm. in lots of ways. And I remember reading an account from a British law enforcement officer pointing out that they had to get lucky every single time, but the bombers only had to get lucky once.
That's right. Yeah. But I thought it was coincidental and probably not. There's probably no connection, but it just seemed to me that was the first time anybody, any official mm-hmm. at the Eastern States had ever brought up that subject.
It spontaneously just raised it.
And it just mm-hmm. kind of, I didn't think much of it at the time, but then 2 or 3 days later.
Did you get the sense it was new to him too? I mean, this is something that he's not.
No, I think they're very aware of security.
Sure. Yeah.
There's quite a police presence on the grounds of the Eastern States Exposition and along the Memorial Avenue and various places around West Springfield. You have to recognize that would be possibly a juicy target,
sure.
I would think. I mean, on a Saturday down there, there's easily 100,000 people on those grounds at any given moment, midday on Saturday, for example.
And they're not exactly on guard. I mean, enjoying themselves and relaxing.
And there's really it's not a hardened perimeter at all. I mean, there are fencing and things of that sort, but if someone wanted to go in there, as would be the case with any fairgrounds, mm-hmm. I suppose, it would be relatively easy.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Well, we're living in a different world than we were in
10
or 15 years ago. Thanks a lot. Other than that, Mr. Beardsley, how was the Big E?
A lot of fun. A lot of fun.
Sounded like it.
Yeah, a lot of walking. You've been there. You know what that's all about.
Yep.
It's interesting. The two venues that we focus on are the Vermont Building and the Mallory Complex.
Mm-hmm.
That's where things are happening that we're interested in. That's where the Vermonters are, in the Vermont Building or at the Mallory Complex where
showing
the cattle shows take place. And there's about a half a mile between those two things.
I remember it well.
A week ago today, I turned my ankle coming out of the library, and it's still pretty swollen up and pretty bruised. And having to walk between those two places took its toll on my poor, sore ankle.
I bet.
But a lot of fun.
Did you soothe your pain with some good Vermont apple pie or a baked potato from the main building?
No, I soothed it with some Jack Daniel's. Daniels.
Isn't Jack Daniels? Like Tennessee was there?
There you go. There you go. No, I found ways to self-medicate when I got back to my hotel room. So, but a lot of fun, and the Vermonters that are down there are just doing, as you know, a spectacular job in putting the positive face forward for the state of Vermont and representing it so well to that great market, which mm-hmm. would be the Hartford, Connecticut, Springfield, Massachusetts, Worcester, Mass, even Boston for that matter. People come from all of those places and more to go to the Eastern States Exposition, and it's just a great place for Vermont to be showcasing itself. Mm-hmm. And those Vermonters down there, I'll tell you, they're on their feet 14 hours a day. It's hard work. I don't know how they do it.
Well, really, it's pretty amazing. I mean, the kids are great, too. The kids, they're so proud of their animals. They're so proud of just even being there and representing it.
Yeah, the 4-H kids give you renew your faith in the future.
Amen. Absolutely. Well, thanks a lot, Tom. I'm
my
really
pleasure.
Glad that you dropped in, and thanks for your thoughtful thoughts about the news of the day. Open Mic will continue in just a few moments. We have to take a bit of a pause for some business. In the meantime, you should sharpen up your dialing finger, your poking finger, and poke those buttons on your phone, 244-1777, or call us toll-free, 1-877-291-8255. And welcome back to Open Mic. Hester Fuller is my name. This is WDEV, as you probably already know. We're talking about the news of the day this morning and eager to hear your thoughts. 244-1777 or toll-free 1-877-291-8255. Of course, we're staying on top of the story coming out of New York. Events change, maybe not rapidly, but they do change as investigations proceed and new information becomes available. As you know, there was a bomb that exploded in the Chelsea neighborhood of New York over the weekend. A second one found not too far away. Actually, a whole little passel of them, I guess, found. No, those were found in Elizabeth, New Jersey is another place. And the link between those two, apparently, there's a 8-year-old fellow that they are now looking for, Ahmad Rahami, a naturalized citizen of Afghani descent who's being sought in connection with the Chelsea bombing, who apparently at one time resided at an address in Elizabeth, New Jersey, which was being searched earlier this morning by FBI folks. So don't know that there's an actual connection, but it's a wicked coinkydink if it isn't an actual connection. We'll stay on top of that and try to stay on top of the facts and try to figure out what's credible and pass it along to you guys as we know more. Other than that, quiet meeting, quiet weekend for some folks, a busy weekend for others, and love to hear what your weekend was like and what you're looking forward to this coming work week. 244-1777 or toll-free 1-877-291-8255. A lot of folks have packed kids off to school, kids off to college, actually, for the first time in recent weeks. And this weekend, we got word that some changes have been made in the rules for financial aid, at least financial aid application, that is, that should make parents and students alike breathe a little bit easier. The FAFSA, which is the big universal form you have to fill out if you want to find out if you're eligible for things like Perkins grants and Pell grants and other sorts of government aid to support you in your secondary education, post-secondary education, excuse me. You can now file those forms as early as October 1st. Used to be the deadline was way in, or you couldn't file them until January sometime. And that made it a pretty tight squeeze because you like to know, because your applications were due at schools and other sources of financial aid as quickly as February. And if you don't know, if you aren't even filing your FAFSA app until January, there's not a whole lot of time between the time you figure out if you're eligible for that support and when you have to get the applications into the individual schools and financial aid organizations. So now folks who file the FAFSA can do so as early as the 1st of October and get the results back, find out what they're eligible for, and have that in the hopper as they file applications at schools and other sources of financial support for students who would like to have their education, their college education. If that's something that's going to make a difference in your family, we'd sure like to hear about it from you. Do you have kids that are staring down the channel at the big decision about what kind of school they may want to go to, what kind of post-secondary ed they may want to pursue? Give us a call. I'd love to know how that works nowadays. It's been a long time since I was on that hunt myself, and I'd love to hear from parents today about how they're handling the the effort for of their children to find college educations and find a way to pay for them as well. 244-1777 or 1-877-291-8255. Maybe you're a family that doesn't, or maybe you're a student who doesn't particularly think that college is the right thing for you. Heaven knows that's certainly true. And in this country, we seem to place an awful lot of emphasis on college degrees when awful lot of useful things are done by folks who do not pursue college degrees but pursue other kinds of training in a chosen field. Love to hear from you, too, if that's something that you're interested in. 244-1777 or 1-877-291-8255. 5-5 is the number here on Open Mic.
Boy, I remember those days. I think the two hardest college-related things I had to do, with, other than the course load and stuff, but that was nothing compared to trying to figure out financial aid to me. It was confusing. It was stressful if we didn't get enough together.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other thing, of course, was just trying to decide what college I wanted to go to. I made the right choice in Linden State College, but there was Boston University, Syracuse. There was a lot of different choices, but boy, that finance, and they were helpful. VSAC, everybody was very helpful, but it was just rocket science to me.
An awful lot of paperwork,
yeah,
and a crash course in arithmetic and math. If you know, if that was not your strong suit coming up, you kind of got your arms around it, just right, filling out those darn applications.
I had my father, who was a lawyer at the time, so he's used to paperwork. He was baffled. So I said, "Well, that's a bad sign. If a high school senior, how am I supposed to figure it out?" But we got there.
Yeah,
got them all paid off.
Yep.
So that's good.
That's a great feeling, isn't it?
Oh, that was a great day. Took a while.
Yeah. Well, you know, and it's taken longer and longer because debt levels are rising and rising, as we keep hearing in the news, for students who leave college burdened with these crazy debts and these crazy monthly payments that they're owing. It is true, because I took advantage of this when I got done with school, that you can have the payment pegged to your actual income level. You know, you may be paying through the nose for 7,000 years, but you know, at least you're able to buy your heating fuel and your food while you're at it and pay your rent. So, I mean, there's ways of making it work for you.
It is nice to see, though, that, like you mentioned, there's the traditional universities and colleges, but now the ones that have different applications, technical things.
Mm-hmm.
You often talk about all the stuff they do up in Craftsbury, and that's amazing.
Well, at the Green Mountain Tech Center, which is everybody who knows me knows that I think the world of that place. I just think it's one of those tech centers generally are sort of the unsung jewels of the Vermont public education system, I think. I mean, the kids there are learning really useful skills, a lot of them landing really well-paying jobs before they even get their diplomas, and getting the basics, the academic basics that they need as well. But learning, you know, all kinds of stuff about how cars fit together, how to fix motorcycles, how to cook for a restaurant, how to do all kinds of digital work, digital jobs, programming and graphics and all kinds of stuff that's useful in this new modern economy. Just tremendous. And Sherry Lusher up there, who took over as director after Joe Teagarden moved down toward Randolph, is just doing a tremendous job up there. It's really, really, really something what they're able to accomplish.
I remember some of the big complaints that I would hear as a senior in college from people who were in more of an industry sector or something that did require different skills than what happened in Greek and Roman classics, also important, but they say, well, these kids, they're not trained for these real-life applications. Well, I think that's changing.
Oh, yeah.
And this was 20 years ago or so when I...
And, you know, the other thing that's really great, and I think this is true, I notice it from, at various levels of schooling, there's an increasing emphasis on learning how to learn efficiently and learning how to be critical consumers of education and critical consumers of new information coming in, which is really, really important. I mean, I think about some of the jobs that are available today hadn't even been thought of when I was in high school.
Yeah, that's true.
And I think we can pretty much expect that that's how things are going to be going forward. So it's important that students develop this kind of meta skill of learning how to learn effectively, wanting to know what's next, wanting to be able to move forward with the world, with the jobs that they're in, not feeling like they should just fold themselves into one little niche and expect it to be there for their entire working lives, because probably it's not going to be.
Move around a lot. I can remember in first grade, they showing us a room full of computers, which were huge.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they were as big as anything, probably a large screen TV. And it looked like one of those. It looked like a NASA laboratory or something. This is the future, children. And I'm thinking, like, well, this looks. But now, of course, when you're a student in first grade, they have the little device. I mean, how far we've come. I don't know if that's me or you.
I think it's probably me.
Could
there we
be
go.
Me.
I have it turned up because
it's,
too many religious experiences with Bruce Springsteen turned up 30 decibels beyond human tolerance as a young person. So.
Well, yeah, you can...
My headphones are up too loud now. There we go.
There you go. So it's interesting where that's gone. But then, as we've talked about, the work they do in Craftsbury at Sterling and stuff, it's not forgetting some of the things, like the fermentation.
Mm-hmm. With Sander Katz, yeah.
That's a very old school way of looking at it, but I don't think it's something that should be lost.
No, I don't think so either. I think this, there's plenty we can learn and plenty we can pull forward into this new era from the good ways and the old ways that should not be lost, and not for any nostalgic or sort of quaintness reasons, but because it's freaking practical.
Yeah, practice. I was just going to say that, practicality.
Yeah,
I left out one word there, but... let's see. We've got 14 minutes before the leaves aren't changing, you know. Have you seen that? They're not.
They are. Really? Well, they're changing. I have a maple tree right outside my barn. There's like a little row of like three or four of them in a row, and they're about 30 years old now. And they were planted a little too close together, so they look like a bunch of peaches on sticks, just in a row. And the one nearest the barn always turns first, and it's started to go. It looks beautiful. I was up mowing above it and looked down there, and there's this little row of green trees and then this orange thing. Just
it's getting there, but they seem, usually by this time, they seem a little more ahead.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe I'm wrong.
Well, it's been warmer. Everybody's been saying so.
Warmer and...
berries had a great year because it was warmer. Tomatoes. Blueberries. Tomatoes are insane this year.
Yeah. That's a good thing because really I wish they could grow all year round. Those are a lot of things I wish. We're coming up to where we're going to lose
all
that stuff.
Well, I bet you somebody at Green Mountain Tech could show you how to make that happen.
You think so?
No, I sure do.
Because it was the hydroponic
Sterling, thing? Too. I don't think you need to go there.
I would like to get into that more. But I got to start with a basic garden first and not be so lazy. That's my... to do for 2017.
Yeah, well, I did it really easy. I just have a tiny little raised bed. It's about 4 feet by 8 feet, and I filled it with alpaca poo and really good Vermont dirt, and I grew the most ridiculous tomatoes this year.
I
keep bragging about them because they're just so awesome.
I don't have much land, but you think one of your alpacas could hang out my house for a little while?
No, but I could bring you a little, a fragrant steaming bucket of the good stuff
times,
if you want.
How many times do people want that to happen? So... might as well throw out.
I'll make it happen for you.
Well,
you just say the word.
Anyway.
More where that came from, too. You are listening to Open Mic on WDEV Radio, and our numbers are 244-1777 or toll-free 1-877-291-8255. We'd surely love to hear from you this morning. Been talking about all kinds of stuff. Been talking about the breaking news out of New York. We talked about the Eastern States Exposition when Tom Beardsley dropped by with that interesting little tidbit that the director of the Eastern States spontaneously volunteered when they were in conversation over the time Tom was down there last weekend, that they've been asked to take some unusual security maneuvers, including welding manhole covers shut. Now, how does that work for the public utilities later? Do they have to then go pry them open again?
I imagine blowtorch or something, but I know that's common if a presidential motorcade will come to town that they do that.
Well, it makes a lot of sense when you think about it.
So the same type of protocol.
Sure. Yeah.
But I guess they'd have to ask the. But I imagine get the blowtorches out and.
Pop the lids.
I guess so.
Yep. 244-1777 or 1-877-291-8255. We'll get you into the conversation here this morning on Open Mic. We'd sure love to hear from you, hear what you think about the news of the day. I put the call out a little while ago about financial aid and whether people are coming to grips with that yet, because we're now able to. It may feel a little bit early to you, and not surprisingly, because up until this year, you had until January to file that federal application that... you have to file if you want to see if you qualify for support for your education. Now you can file it as early as October 1st, which is coming up, oh my goodness, very soon. And if you do that, you'll hear back sooner, and then you'll kind of know where you stand when you go applying to specific schools. And I'm curious about whether any folks are thinking about that this soon, or we're going to just wait till the deadlines get closer and the kids make up their minds about what they want to do.
October 1st, hard to believe, is a week from this Saturday.
It's frightening.
Wow. And then,
well, it's
of course,
not frightening. It's just kind of like too quick.
Well, it just goes by quick. And then the equinox is 10/21 Thursday morning.
And it's going to be equal, right? I guess it was a big eclipse last week, too.
Friday.
I paid no attention.
Beautiful.
Whatsoever. Was it really?
Our friend Corey has taken some wonderful pictures.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah.
Oh, that's true. Yes, Corey Sanders, the tattoo queen of Craftsbury, Vermont. She's taken some stunning, stunning photographs.
Tattoo's always very sharp and vibrant. She was on here.
She's amazing.
A while ago.
Yeah, maybe it's time to get her back in here again and see what she's been up to.
She's been doing some farming things lately.
She has a wonderful horse, and she's very happy about it.
That'd be kind of interesting to update.
Yeah. Well, I'll get hold of Corey and see if we can get her to come in again and give us an update on what's going on in that universe. But you're right, those photographs have been really, really stunning. I've seen a lot of really neat pictures. And, of course, Bill from Barry called a while ago to talk about the wonderful sunflowers that he saw. That would be spectacular. Blue, blue sky, bright yellow flowers. Gorgeous.
Those are hard to grow. You know, they're very temperamental.
Are
so,
they?
Yeah, they can. I mean, they're wild like anything. They do fine, but to really, they're tricky.
Really? I've never found them tricky. I found that I get forests of them under my bird feeder every year.
Yeah, I guess it depends on the region. Some people really struggle with them. Other people, you know.
I never plant them. They just pop up under my bird feeder.
See, that's what I'm thinking, is if they're just a wild thing, they just happen. Great. But if you try to do them at home, and they haven't been there before. I know I've tried it before. I love sunflowers, but they're
great.
They don't seem to like me very much. But that's okay. I like them anyway.
I think they're beautiful, too. 244-1777 or toll-free 1-877-291-8255. We'll put you in touch with Open Mic here on WDEV. We're going to take a brief break for business, and we'll be back right after these words. Good morning and welcome back. It's a few minutes before our 10 o'clock news break here on WDEV. This is the Open Mic program, and I'm Hester Fuller, and you can reach this conversation with your own dialing finger at 244-1777 or toll-free 1-877-291-8255. I'm here with Tom McLeod this morning, eager to hear what your thoughts are. Gosh, anybody watch the Emmys last night? I thought it was kind of intriguing that the big four that we're used to seeing, dominate, or we were if you're of a certain age, I guess, the big four networks only scored, what, like two or three of those awards last night? Two awards, I guess. Most of them went to these upstart networks, you know, who put on shows. I'm thinking like BBC America won an award for the Orphan Black program, which is... Yeah,
that
was
good. I love that channel. That's a great channel.
That is a wonderful channel. There's some really good stuff there. Of course, I watch it on... Hulu now.
Yeah.
Hulu, Acorn.
So. Oh, that's another one of those. But I think maybe what you're seeing is what we're talking about, changing technologies. It's not the big four.
Mm-hmm.
You can get device, Hulu, Netflix.
Yep, all those things. It's kind of amazing. Jimmy Kimmel did well last night, too, I guess, huh?
I guess, yeah, I was watching the Red Sox.
Ah, okay.
So, and we can get, but we won't have time to get into that. Although, one thing, wouldn't it be nice? I never want to make a prediction, but what Rama was saying, and I agree, go Cubs.
Go Cubs.
However, what if those last seven games, we'll put it this way, of the season was between Wrigley and Fenway?
That would actually be a great jubilant ceremony. I mean, I love my Bohos. I really do. But, you know, there's such a thing as an abundance of riches, and I'd be happy to share
that
with the Cubs.
Talk about Field of Dreams.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, yeah. And speaking of which.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Well, maybe we can get into that after the break. Yeah. Talk about Field of Dreams, indeed. Wouldn't that be tremendous, a Cubs-Red Sox series? God, in two of the best ballparks in the world.
The old ones that there's been at Fenway some upgrades, but they haven't bulldozed it down. They've kept a tradition.
Yeah.
Been a lot of pressure to do so over the years. But.
You know, my cousin was the clerk of the works for that renovation, and my cousin's husband was. He's a good Vermonter.
Really?
His name's Rob Griffin, yeah.
He should come on. That would be fascinating.
Yeah, I would get it, but he's been doing stuff now, I think, down at the Patriots place at Gillette Stadium. That's what he does. He kind of oversees overhauls of great sports structures, apparently. But anyway, when he was doing the Fenway renovation, when he was in charge of that, you know, getting stuff in and around and communicating with the architects and stuff, he used to run little tours, and it was fantastic. I went down several times. Oh, I took six. I mean...
I've played on the field once before.
That was the big rule. You couldn't set foot out on the grass.
Yeah, so when they said that when we got there, and then they said, too bad we're doing it again anyway. So,
man.
That was great. And then I went up, Billy on the mound, pitching because it was a fantasy camp thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, okay, I can at least get maybe roll it up to the Green Monster.
Mm-hmm.
And he should have been pitching watermelons. It was so easy. And I couldn't get it past second base. That's why I don't play baseball. But that was quite the trip.
It really is. It's really something to see, to get out there and to see it. My favorite view of Fenway, if you go way out, one of the places Rob took us was under the stands, like near where the scoreboard is. We didn't actually go into the scoreboard, but there's a big rolling door back there where where some of those things, you know, the little wagons come out with
golf
carts.
Got stuck the other day, but...
Oh, did it? Really? Yeah. Well, anyway, I was one of the times I was there was a beautiful, beautiful late fall afternoon, sunny, gorgeous, and that door was open, and we came around the corner, and you look out, and you see the whole field spreading in front of you, and you look right straight into the press box, you know, up behind home plate.
Yeah.
Absolutely, really, really
beautiful. Did you see the bowling alley?
Did didn't see the bowling alley.
Was bowling alleys in the catacombs.
Was unaware there. That there was
be,
a bowling alley.
Unless they took it out.
Was that for, like, cross training?
I think it was for when the players would spend more time there. They got bored is what I've, okay. what I've heard. But, you know, it was legends, rumors, and lies. Who knows?
Oh, who knows? Well, anyway, was just the thought of having the World Series be played between the Cubs and the Red Sox just warms my heart. I think that would be just a wonderful thing. Well, stay tuned here to WDEV News Radio for the latest coming up at the top of the hour. This is WDEV AM 550 in Waterbury, also broadcasting on 96.1 FM out of Warren and Waitsfield, 96.5 in Barrie, Vermont, and now 98.3 out of Montpelier. And, of course, over the independently owned airwaves of 101.9 FM in Island Pond and streaming live at RadioVermont.com. Stay tuned for news. Come back on the other side. Take this down, 244-1777 or 1-877-291-8255. That'll put you in communication with Open Mic, and we will be back on the other side of news. Good morning and welcome back to Open Mic here on WDEV. Hester Fuller is my name. I'm with you until 11 o'clock this morning and hoping to hear from you. Give us a call at 244-1777 or toll free 1-877-291-8255. In just a few minutes, we expect to cut away to our friends at Talk Media News down in Washington. I do want to remind you, though, that if you stick around till 11 o'clock, you can hear Bill Sayers and Rob Roper on Common Sense Radio, brought to you by the Ethan Allen Institute. Today, they're taking up an interesting topic. The question they're asking, should Vermont impose a tax on services, like we've already got one on retail sales products and rooms and meals tax, gasoline tax. Should there be a tax on services? That's the question Bill Sayers and Rob Roper will be taking up this morning at 11 on Common Sense Radio, brought to you by the Ethan Allen Institute. And now it's time to cut away to Washington, D.C., where Victoria Jones is on the line. Good morning, Victoria.
Good morning.
How are you today?
Very well, thank you.
So what's the buzz down there? Everybody talking about New York, or what are they talking about?
Yes, everybody's talking about the investigation into the bombings, the bombing and the attempted bombing in New York and the bombing in New Jersey, which authorities are now saying they do believe are linked.
Mm-hmm.
And the man who is wanted for questioning in connecting with the New York and New Jersey explosions, Ahmed Khan Rahami, age 28, 5'6", and 200 pounds.
Hmm. So I understand that one of the precautions they've taken is to put the Amtrak trains on a reduced schedule between D.C. and New York. I know you're a train rider on occasion, and I'm wondering if you know like how reduced that is and whether it's extending farther up the Northeast coast. Or
I don't know how reduced that is, but let me try to find out, because that definitely will impact you. There's no question about it.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, there's going to be a knock-on anyway.
Sure.
No question about it. There were major disruptions late last night in terms of what was going on with once they discovered the devices in Elizabeth.
Yeah.
New Jersey. Let me see what it's saying about the Northeast Corridor. There aren't any alerts.
Well, I know that New York is complicated too by the fact that there's this convening of world leaders at the United Nations, I guess. And
Exactly. Well, they've added 1,000 extra members of law enforcement in New York because of the UN General Assembly. And so that they're also around commuter points in particular, but obviously around the UN as well. That's certainly service disruptions. Let's go service disruptions. See what they're saying here.
Always on the case, Victoria. Checking the train schedule for us.
They're saying minor delays is what they're saying. At this point, that's all they're putting here is minor delays.
Well, then maybe things have eased up a little, or they've satisfied themselves that that's not something I need to be as worried about, although I'm sure security is still at a premium up and down the Eastern Seaboard in light of what happened.
They're not putting any extra advisories or notices of disruptions or any extra There's nothing on their site to indicate any extra disruption today.
Well, that's good news. Yeah. Now, cybersecurity has also been in the news out of Washington in the last few days. Colin Powell's email has now been hacked.
Yeah, Colin Powell's emails were hacked. And lawmakers are raising pressure on President Obama to confirm that Russia was behind the hacks of the Democratic National Committee, other political organizations, and presumably Colin Powell as well. Representative Adam Schiff, Democrat of California, who is the ranking member, the senior Democrat on the House Intelligence Committee, told reporters last week, "I think the only thing that Russian President Vladimir Putin respects is a strong response. The longer this goes on without the administration making attribution, then I think the longer we're going to see these hacks continue." And now, the administration officials have spoken more publicly about their ability to handle the hacking threat and retaliate. FBI director said last week that the U.S. response won't always be in the public eye. He said, "We have a variety of tools that we as a government can use to deter behavior on the Internet outside of norms, and that can involve a variety of things, only some of which could be visible to the public."
Well, that just seems to make common sense, doesn't it?
Well, you wouldn't necessarily know exactly.
Right.
Now, there were also some reports that the FBI may pursue indictments of Russian hackers.
Oh, really? That is a piece of news I had not yet heard.
Yeah.
Do they feel these are the folks that have been, making the news that we've been hearing in recent weeks, or are these just sort of general industrial espionage, political espionage kinds of?
Well, these would be the ones who have been the ones behind the attacks against the DNC, various think tanks, and other political entities. Now, they would probably be on the U.S. jurisdiction, but the thinking is that it would be name and shame. It was the same sort of action that they took against Chinese hackers back in 2014.
Well, that's a story we're going to keep our eyes on, especially as we draw closer and closer to our election day. Thank you so much, Victoria. I always look forward to our little chats on Monday morning, and I look forward to talking with you again next week.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye. Victoria Jones from Talk Media News here on WDEV, and you are listening to the Open Mic program. It's about 13 minutes after 10 o'clock. We're here until 11 o'clock, and we will have lots more to chat about right after these words. Good morning and welcome back to Open Mic here on WDEV News Radio. Hester Fuller is my name. I'm here with Tom McLeod. We're here till 11 o'clock and eager to hear what you have to say about the news of the day. 244-1777 or toll free 1-877-291-8255 is the number to put you in touch and on the air here on Open Mic. You know, Tom, I was thinking, we have this whole rash of attacks and, attempted bombings, bombs left in wastebaskets and put in dumpsters where they blow up and stuff this weekend in this country. And we're also seeing actions foiled or not foiled overseas this past weekend. It seems to me that we're seeing this uptick in these kind of attacks outside or in other countries. At the same time as we've also been seeing very slow but steady progress against ISIS on the ground in the Middle East. And it just makes me wonder if this is all related. I mean, if we're seeing that, as they put the squeeze on ISIS in the Middle East, in its home territory, whether we're just squeezing the problem outward into nations around the world and seeing an uptick in these kinds of attacks. Fred from Newbury, you're on the air here on Open Mic. What's your thought?
Well, the bomber in New York is very interesting. The authorities never told us what the explosive was. Isn't that interesting?
Well, they haven't told us yet. That's right.
We don't know what it is. We don't know what it is, right? Because we haven't tested it out. Well, here's the interesting thing about explosives. If you want to buy explosives, you have to go to the ATF, fill out a paperwork that takes 2 weeks, another 6 months to get your explosive. You got to have a proper place to store it. So this guy could not possibly buy or get his hands on an explosive. And most of the news media don't even know what an explosive is.
Not legally, he couldn't, but certainly we've plenty of witness to you know, illegally obtained things
no,
like
C4. No, he couldn't obtain it because if you have a reason to have an explosive, you've got to have a place that's secure, and the ATF won't allow you to have that explosive.
Well, I'm not sure this guy's paying a whole lot of attention to the ATF, do you? Do you think he's really asking for permission to do this? I kind of don't.
No, he can't get one. That's the point. He can't get it and he can't steal it. That's it. He can't get it and he can't steal it. And so here's the big deal. The big deal was they didn't tell us what the explosive was because, number one, it wasn't an explosive. It was called a deflagrant. And a deflagrant is a chemical that burns below the speed of sound, i.e. gunpowder is a deflagrant. And this is what this guy was using in that particular bomb.
Now, so, I'm curious as to how you would know that.
You have to, if you want to know something, all you have to do is look it up. And look it up. That's all you have to do. Look up explosive. That's all you have to do is just look it up.
Well,
it's not hard. You get the internet out and you can. And that's
well, that's the thing. That's what I was worried about.
The news media. The news media, they absolutely do not do their homework. Here's how you define an explosive. An explosive is a chemical that burns faster than the speed of sound.
I'm not really sure what that has to do with what's going on there. Maybe you can enlighten me. But it also seems to me that we've learned from America's own Timothy McVeigh that you can make explosives with things that are perfectly legal to buy, like fertilizer.
Yeah, that's true. Timothy McVeigh actually made an explosive.
Mm-hmm.
And after the after that event, all ammonium nitrate now, the biammonium nitrate that you can make into an explosive, you got to have paperwork. You got to have a reason for it.
Unless you steal it.
Like you're a farmer.
Well.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, once the farmer has it, it's not so hard to see.
If he can't store it properly, he can't have it.
Mm-hmm.
That's the whole thing.
I kind of doubt that American farmers are at the root of this, you know, uptick in bombings. But, you know, it's worth thinking about whether or not that explosive was obtained legally or illegally, and where it came from, you know, and it's showing up and we're seeing an uptick in these attacks. And I'm just kind of wondering what that's all connected to. Thanks for calling us, Fred. I hope you'll give us another call. You call almost every week and I always like to hear from you. So do it. Let's hear from another listener. 244-1777 or 1-877-291-8255 is our number. Give us a call here on Open Mic. We'd surely be glad to hear from you. We're following the news in New York. We heard a bit just a while ago from our friend down in Washington, Victoria Jones, who tells us that the disruptions in train travel appear to be on the ebb now. There were tremendous disruptions last night after the bomb was found in Elizabeth, New Jersey, near the train station. We have a caller from Moortown ready to weigh in. Arthur, good morning.
Good morning. I just thought I'd tell you that they did say where the powder came from for the explosives.
Oh, good. What did you hear?
Well, it was made from the powder that's used in exploding targets that you can buy in any sporting goods shop.
Okay. So it wasn't something that was hard to come by, in other words.
No, you can go.
Yeah. And I understand the bomb in New York was also laden with ball bearings and other kinds of shrapnel-y type things, like the bombs that went off at the
Boston
Marathon.
Readily available at Hughes.
Yeah. Well, there you go, and there it is. What do you think about this idea that it seems more than coincidental that we're seeing an uptick in these attacks, or we're hearing about an uptick in these attacks overseas as the coalition in the Middle East is closing in and slowly but steadily gaining ground against ISIS in the Middle East on their home territory?
Well, my own opinion of this last is because everybody's come to the United Nations.
Yeah, you know, there is that. You're saying that would be the motivation for what you see is happening here?
Yeah, just put a little fear into them.
Yeah, well, possibly. But, you know, it's funny that they would be, that the bombs would be placed in the neighborhood of Manhattan where they were placed, Chelsea, which is not, you know, not that near. It's nearer than we are, but it's not that near to where they're meeting. But that's definitely worth considering, and I appreciate that new thought.
Okey-dokey.
Thank you very much, Arthur, for giving us a call. I hope you call again on Open Mic. Hope you'll call, too, 244-1777, or call us toll-free, 1-877-291-8255.
Although I suppose, just to complete maybe a thought, he was going, you would imagine around the UN, security would be much higher.
Oh, yeah. Well, they put on another 1,000 people.
But so if you went to the Chelsea neighborhood, they were, you know, maybe it was just hard to get to the UN.
Yeah. Well, there's that possibility, too.
Yeah. So I don't know, though. Boy,
that's also just a residential. I mean, I've been on that block. It's you know, it's a regular city neighborhood. It's a kind of a fun, nice place with some really cool people who live there. And just the idea of things just kind of randomly going off in a dumpster.
Well, I guess it's that element of surprise. It happens where you don't think it's going to happen. Maybe that's what made people nervous at some of the fairground areas.
Well, sure. And, I mean, that's kind of the objective, I think, behind a lot of these attacks is just to make us apprehensive and to try to throw a monkey wrench into the normal routines of our daily life. But good old New Yorkers, I heard a few on the radio this morning saying that it wasn't going to slow them up any, that you just can't cave to it, even if it might be going off. It was a tourist that was interviewed, I guess, in New York who said, you know, she could step off a sidewalk and get run over by a delivery truck. So you can't let these things slow you down.
I saw the guy was an architect on television that they were interviewing when this happened over the weekend when it first was reported. Of course, they were trying to get the eyewitness. Well, what did you see? And his basic thing is, you know, this is not new, especially after the anniversary. We just came over. He's here. But this is really a question more about anything about just how our fellow humans are doing. Because they didn't know if there would be a death toll or anything at first. Fortunately, there wasn't.
Yep.
But
yeah, and everybody that was injured has since been released from hospital, so we didn't have any life-threatening conditions.
Scary stuff, though.
It is scary. I wonder if I was still living in New York, how I would be responding to this. And I'm curious about other Vermonters and what they think. Would this slow you up? Is this going to discourage you from making a trip down to New York, say, for Christmas? I have a lot of friends who do that. They bundle up a bunch of friends and take the train down to New York for a weekend before Christmas time and take in the sights, go look at the shop windows, and just walk around in New York at Christmas time. If that's on your annual agenda, are you thinking that one through again? Are you going to get other plans? Do you have a plan to go down to New York anytime soon? And has this news changed your thoughts about being there? We'd be curious. 244-1777 or toll-free 1-877-291-8255.
It's a great form of transportation, those trains. I mean, it's just to get on, it's very easy. And, of course, I know the one that you take from New York, from Ticonderoga, you can go up to Montreal and back. I haven't looked into this for a few years, but it's dirt cheap.
Oh, that's great. You know, the other thing that's really cool that Amtrak did, and they did this while I was working on a large paper for school, they made a special deal if you were writing. You could get a cheap fare, possibly even free sometimes, and you set yourself up on one of the trains that's not totally packed, running up and down. On Vermonter was one of the lines where you could do this. And I used to write on the train all the time. I was seeing somebody in New York at the time, so I was going up and down a lot. And it was great. You'd go into the dining car, and you'd sit down at one of those big tables and spread your stuff out. And I can write on a train. I can work on a train. It's just great.
Kind of a forgotten mode of transportation for some. They're trying to get it kind of going again. I was just always concerned when they took out all these rails because they weren't using them. What if we need them again? I mean, there's probably other technologies, clean coal or something, that you could. They run on boilers. Is there a way? The old ones did. So the way to do that now with technology that I think we might have rushed to strip out some of those lines.
Well, yeah, maybe that's the case. But it would be nice to see even the lines that we do have utilized more.
Absolutely.
I would love to see something coming up the eastern coast of Vermont, you know, to get you down to Boston quick. Instead of just, I mean, now you got to travel all the way across to the western border town state lines and head down that way if you want to go. And no question you can go, or down way down south to White River if you want to head anywhere, head to Springfield and on to New York. But I just think it's a tremendous way to travel. I really, really enjoy it.
A lot of that stuff in the works. We'll see how far it's been kind of a struggle. But the other thing I saw that was amazing, I get nostalgic. I like the old modes of steamships and such. They're going to maybe revitalize the SS United States, which still has the Blue Ribbon record. That's it from the United States.
Now, refresh my memory. What
is
this ship?
It's a ship longer than Titanic. Mm. It was built in the 1950s. It was the fastest. I mean, the speed of it was amazing. And now it's been since last 20 years has been just sitting, rusting.
Mothballed?
Basically. Everything stripped out of it in the harbor in Philadelphia.
And they're going to restore it?
A cruise line has taken it over, and if they can do it, it's sort of like, you know, with the Queen Mary
Yeah.
Some of these that they made into hotels. But, you know, there's quite a few of those hotels. The Queen Elizabeth II was maybe going to QE2. Anyway, so they might refurbish that. And
pretty neat.
Put it out, you know, something that's historic like that. So that make it work. And I've seen they've been doing this testing to do maybe dirigibles again.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
That would be a blast.
Because, I mean, it seemed like what a comfortable way to travel around. And, of course, the Hindenburg was full of helium, but they don't run them on that
there are plenty of, aren't there plenty of gases that are lighter than air?
It was hydrogen that
did. Hydrogen, yeah.
And then, of course, now it's more of a, yeah. So sort of it's just interesting, the different, there's focuses on going to Mars and supersonic.
Mm-hmm.
And then the driverless cars, which scare me. That gets a lot of news, but there's some other modes of transportation.
Yeah, I'm actually working on a call-in guest on that. I have a very close friend who's in Pittsburgh, and I would very much like to hear from him, see if I can coax him into ordering up an Uber and calling us on his cell phone while he's being piloted around the city. We're working on that one. Didn't come together for this week. I probably shouldn't say that, right? I should just like spring it on people when it finally happens.
No, that's okay. It's something to look, you know, that you could. Mm-hmm. It'd be great to have the guy that did the Fenway readers helped with that.
Yeah, absolutely.
That would be interesting.
Yeah, I will. He's kind of shy.
It's
most of my good friends
are
wicked
friendly.
Shy.
I'm sure. I'm sure it won't be too. I mean, Corey, a lot of people have come on here and said, "Oh no," and then they had a wonderful time.
Oh yeah, no, it's fun. It's fun. We don't do anything evil to people, and I regard people who walk in that door as my guest, not my adversary. So I'm happy to have them come, and I'm happy to have a conversation and find out what they know that I don't know. That's the kind of the point. You know, we all know different things, and that's how you learn stuff, is you get people in who know things you don't know yet. You are listening to WDEV's Open Mic. What do you know that I don't know? I bet it's plenty. Why don't you give us a call and tell us about it? 244-1777 or toll-free 1-877-291-8255. Anybody get out to that music festival this weekend on the lake? I'm just looking for it.
I've heard lots of great things about that. Of course, Artie was there.
Yes, Artie was there. I saw that. He was like flaunting his wristband. And
well, it's a great, and the weather was good. That, yeah. They've had some years raining and cold, and we had for this time of year a pretty night. It was supposed to be rainier yesterday, and
it wasn't too bad. No, it wasn't. I was able to actually mow yesterday, but boy, what a lineup they had, too. What a great, fun thing to do for the last full weekend of summer.
There's a lot of great talent musically and beyond, and there's a lot of great venues, and people are out there all the time recording.
Yep. Yeah.
And playing concerts.
Yep. Yep. Waterfront Park, Burlington. Great spot. Yeah, I've been to a few wonderful, memorable evenings. I was there when Garrison Keillor was there. And he led us all singing hymns to the, or singing America the Beautiful to the boats that were floating just off the shoreline there. We were wonderful. He was a great choir leader, and we sounded absolutely heavenly. It was great. It was really fun.
A lot of great outside venues. There's all the great old opera houses. And then little restaurants and stuff. I mean, the music scene is just amazing.
It's always been pretty great around here.
I can't imagine. I think there's music. And then certainly, like I know, being from Montpelier, they'll have maybe a big show at the City Hall.
Or City Hall.
And then there'll be all these little after shows. And then some of the artists will just crash a show. I mean, it's a neat little. And that happens in Burlington.
Mm-hmm.
Stowe.
Yep. Not just music. I mean, there's a Vermont Comedy Club up there, which is a great new addition to the scene. Well, not so new anymore, I suppose. And then all the little regional theaters, the little small local theater groups, which are just so much fun.
Keep marching right along.
Here we go. No shortage of good times to be had here in the Green Mountain State. What are you doing with your Monday morning? You at work? Can you call anyway? 244-1777 or toll-free 1-877-291-8255. What do you see out of your window this morning? Love to hear what's on your mind and what you think we ought to be paying attention to. Time is about 10:30 or so here. We're here till 11 o'clock, at which time Bill Sayers will join us. He and Rob Roper bring you Common Sense Radio. Actually, Bill's here every weekday morning at 11 o'clock with Common Sense Radio, brought to you by the Ethan Allen Institute. And today the topic, should Vermont have a tax on services? You know, like we already have a sales tax and a rooms and meals tax, a gasoline tax. Should there be a tax on services? What do you suppose the answer is going to be, Tom?
Well, I hope not. but it's, you know, whatever the explore both sides of that. So that's always what's interesting. I like what Bill says. I might not agree with this, but it's important to look at both sides.
I think it's really, you know, that's certainly my mantra. I like to know things that I don't know. I like to hear points of view that aren't mine. And boy, do I get them here, and it's good for me. It's good for me to hear what people think, especially people I don't necessarily agree with. I really appreciate they're taking the time and having the patience to explain their points of view to me. If you've got an opinion you'd like to share on open mic with our listeners, give us a call, 244-1777, or toll-free, 1-877-291-8255.
We had back last week a guy that was with us a while ago, Roger Hill.
Yeah.
Was on, and talking about the, at one point, about the 1927 flood came up. He was saying at a certain point that because there wasn't as many trees then,
mm-hmm.
all the farming, that there's some models and stuff, that the technical stuff he does, that with the foliage that we have now, that might not have happened.
Really? No kidding.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think there's some theory involved in that. I'm sure somebody's got
a theory about why it would be that way.
But kind of interesting.
Yeah, it is interesting. And weather changing the way it has been. I had a conversation with some neighbors over the weekend who are just kind of resigned to the fact that we're in for hot summers from now on. They're thinking that, well, I guess in the wake of news, that July, first of all, had been the hottest July on record. Then August was the hottest August on record. They're thinking that, you know, maybe this is just something we're going to be seeing a lot more of, the way the weather is changing, whether it's human-caused or whether it is something that is part of the natural grand cycle of things, no matter what your point of view on that is. I can't believe we don't have something to do with it, though. John from Washington, glad to hear from you this morning. What's on your mind?
Well, I'm just thinking about the reasons. I'm going to go ahead and call them terror attacks, you know, over in New Jersey, New York.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Donald Trump fought on with that wall. We got to have it.
Got to have
it. We got to look into, he was talking about his immigration, you know, reform, his plan there about.
Yeah.
Better vetting and everything, and we definitely got to look into it, because pretty soon we're going to have it all over. It's going to be on our front door. And
well, I got to ask you something, though, John. You know, the thing is, the guy they're looking for, he's actually an American citizen, naturalized American citizen. He's been here quite some time already.
Well, I mean, I just heard something. They were saying it might be going back to, I don't know if it was your radio station or another, just barely, but might be going back to a Afghani citizen that is now a U.S. citizen, but he was originally an Afghani.
He was, but he went through the
stuff, and I definitely,
well, a naturalized citizen
culture, any of that, you know, I mean, went over there, fought for them. They're great people, very nice.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody has their bad apples, but
mm-hmm.
we can't be having those bad apples come in our door.
Well, I hear you there. You sound like someone who's been there.
Oh yeah, most certainly. And I just
tell us,
we need that wall, and we gotta work, keep us safe.
Yeah, tell us about your experience. Where were you?
I was over in Campina, over in Kabul, Afghanistan.
Uh-huh.
For OEF 2010, and it was a good time over there. Great people, very friendly, you know, and
yeah,
we were very fortunate. So,
and yet we have, as you say, we've got bad apples in every place, and it seems like we have a bad apple there seeking down in New York. But he was an American citizen; he was naturalized, which is a fairly lengthy process.
That is interesting.
Yeah, it is. It's curious. I'm curious about why people would go to the trouble of becoming citizens and then decide that they were going to torpedo the place that that has taken them
right.
in.
Why would you take so much effort to go somewhere and, you know, become one of them to just, you know, try to change it?
Yeah.
And I mean, they didn't like to begin with. Why'd you come?
Well, you know, we, you know, try to change it. We're always trying to change it, aren't we? All of us are. We're always trying to suggesting one thing or another. So I can't fault them for that. But I don't think it's, you know.
I just hope it's change for the better.
Change for the better would be good. And I'm not sure I agree with you about the wall, but I think it's something that a lot of people are thinking might be some kind of a solution. And I think, you know.
I'm not one for higher taxes, but I'll accept a little extra tax taken out of my check to build a wall.
You would. Well,
yeah, and I'm a full Republican, and I don't like taxes.
Yeah, yeah. So you liking Mr. Trump this year?
I do. I do like Mr. Trump. You know, I consider the idea of Johnson, but I don't know. I think he's a little too wacky for me. And at first, Trump was too, and I was really quite scared. But the more I listen to him, the more I think Trump's going to be the man.
You really think so, huh?
Oh, yeah, because I'll never vote for Hillary.
Yeah. Well, I guess, you know, a lot of people are feeling that way. I'm not really quite sure why. What's your reasoning?
You know, the whole Benghazi thing really gets me. I don't trust her. She's just, you know, her actions, her body language, everything says, you know, don't trust me.
Well, that's curious. I guess I hadn't even thought about that, and maybe it's because I'm also female and I don't recognize anything particularly alarming about her body language in that regard. I guess you're seeing something there that I have not personally noticed.
I just see her, and, you know, the Benghazi thing really gets me, the email,
Well, the Benghazi thing.
The Clinton Foundation. It seems like there's one thing after another. And, you know, the emails.
But the thing is.
The classified emails, I mean, that's her security clearance.
Well, that's pretty alarming. And, I mean, even Colin Powell had something to say about that. He wasn't too happy being hauled into that particular mess as he was. But the thing about Benghazi, I mean, every single president in my lifetime has experienced some kind of an action on, you know, U.S. government places in other countries with deaths resulting.
President, but, I mean, they were telling generals to stand down. Generals are spinning up the Marines to go in and, you know, to save our guys. And they told him stand down so much that you can resign that general.
I'm not sure I entirely believe that. So maybe we differ there in our views on what might have happened. But I do think that this is not an uncommon occurrence. It's a horrendous occurrence. It's a horrible occurrence. I mean, how many Marines were taken out during the Reagan administration in Beirut? 283, something like that? I mean, it's awful when this happens. There's absolutely no question about it. But I think to pick on Hillary for one event when we've seen them repeatedly, as ghastly as they are, and as much as we don't ever want to see this happen, it's not just Hillary's watch that has seen these events. And it seems that the attention paid to this is disproportionate to, you know, where the blame could be spread.
And I mean, the NRA loves them. You'd never see them ever go for Hillary.
That's probably true.
She's trying to take our guns, and here we have a police officer taking out that terrorist. I mean, granted, he wasn't on duty, but he was still concealed carrying. We need that.
Well, you know, and I think the more we see these events, the more people share your point of view on this. I think that that's, you know, the more we see these kinds of, the more we hear about these things, too. People start to really start to feel that it's close to them and it's something they probably need to deal with. It's alarming. I just feel like, you know, when I hear about, I got no problem with people being able to have their own weapons. I think that is something that's guaranteed. I do have a problem with places like the University of Texas, for example, allowing students to carry them into class. I mean, I really think that there's a place where common sense kicks in. And it just seems to me, I mean, how do you feel about that? Do you feel like there should be no restrictions at all on where we can take these weapons?
Well, you know, I think proper training is a good idea.
Oh, I think so,
too. Definitely shouldn't be giving guns to little kids or anything. I mean, everybody should be trained, proficient in a weapon if they're going to own a weapon. Carrying them to school or not, I mean, well, what if someone came to attack that school? I would hope someone was there to stop them.
You know, well, I would hope so, but
that's for the security to do. But if they don't have security, why not be able to protect yourself? Because it's your right. You're not out brandishing it. You're not, you know, threatening anybody with it. It's concealed. Mm-hmm. No one even knows you have it. Rearming.
Well, I think that's a totally legitimate opinion. I don't necessarily share it completely, but I think that's totally legitimate. And I hear a lot of people make that argument. One of the arguments about the training piece is that one argument I hear is that, look, it's your right, it's not a privilege, you ought to be able to do it without any training. But then if you did do training and you needed to verify that you'd had the training and were therefore capable of, you know, handling things responsibly, supposedly, you'd have to have some little piece of paper, which means your name would be somewhere, you'd be registered. And there's people who feel that that's kind of an invasion of their privacy. And yet, on the other hand, as you point out, it's a good idea to have some training when you're handling a lethal object. What do you think?
Well, I mean, that is true. That's a double-edged sword there. I definitely think everybody should be trained, whether it's forcibly put upon you. I mean, I don't want to have a weapon in my hands I don't know how to use. I mean, that makes me dangerous to myself. So, but I don't agree with any registration or anything of that nature. Mm-hmm. But when you purchase a weapon, normally they'll give you a run through it. And normally you sit there and, I don't know, they give you a decent assembly of it or whatever. You know, disassemble it, show me how to use it, at least where I go. And I go to a place over in Waterbury. You know, and they're very great folks over there that help me right out. Every time I have any questions, you know, they are a great source of information and a little bit of training out of it. Use that firearm.
Yeah, and no question, those folks who are doing this and want to keep doing it are responsible and do take care and do the checks that are necessary and the you know, make sure that you can handle at least that part of it competently before they let you out the door with it. But then we have an awful lot of people who are picking these weapons up in places that are nowhere near as responsible as our responsible gun shop dealers in Vermont. And it's a problem. It's a real worry. Well, thank you very much for giving us a call, John, from Washington. I hope you will call us again on Open Mic. We need to stop and do a little bit of business, and then we'll come back. We have a caller from Fairfax waiting on the line, and we will hear from him right after these words on Open Mic. The ticking clock ticks away. It's about 10:45 here. We're here until 11 o'clock this morning on Open Mic, and we're inviting your phone calls, 244-1777 or toll-free 1-877-291-8255. We're going up to Fairfax, where John has been very patient waiting on the line. Good morning, John. Thanks for hanging in there.
Hi, good morning, Hester. Hey, Hester, did you see the Friday afternoon document dumped by the White House where they... Obama administration has sent Mexico $75 million to help them build a wall between them and Central America.
I had not seen that. No, I had not.
You should get on the Friday afternoon internet and find out all this stuff.
Where is your source? I will go look at that immediately. Where's your source?
And also, Hester, yeah. If you would notice that the wall to build would cost us $10 billion to build our end of the wall.
Mm-hmm.
And it costs us $113 billion a year to take care of illegal immigrants. So I say we spend the $10 billion and use the rest to pay down the national debt.
Well, what do you think? Do you think that would really keep people out?
Of course I do.
How many
Absolutely.
People would you, what would it cost
think,
to man
so what
it?
Do you think they're doing now? They're just walking across now.
No. What do you think? I mean, just having the wall there is not going to do it, right? I mean,
yes,
we're going to have people enforcing it.
Yes, of course it is. Why wouldn't it? They're walking across, Hester. If
because
you build
if no
a
one's
million dollar wall, they're not going to walk across.
I hear you, John. But what if they're scaling the wall and there's no immigration,
they're
you know, naturalization
scaling.
Folks?
Hester, you got to have the wall first before you find out how they're going to try to get around it. But
it's
crazy to say don't build it because no matter what we do, they're going to get around it.
Oh, no, I don't say it for that reason. I say don't build it because don't keep them out. That's my view. I really feel like we benefit.
Between Mexico and Central America, then somebody should put a wall between us and Mexico.
Well, duly noted. I have to say I will agree to disagree on that. I think America is far better with people coming in, new people, new ideas, new stuff. And anybody who's got the guts to leave home and make it up here, that's an incredibly arduous, grueling journey, great personal risk, risk to family, risk to self. Anybody who's got that kind of grit and gumption, we could use more of in this country, I think. That's just my private view.
We have immigration laws. There are ways of getting in the country the safe way.
That's true.
We've got tuberculosis all over Southern California now. And when's polio going to make the scene again? I mean, these people need to go through the process that's been in place for all these years and has protected us from all these diseases that we've spent fortune secure. And now they're coming back again.
Yeah.
And has spent $75 million of our taxpayers' dollars to build a wall between Mexico and another country. And then sit there and say, well, this wall's not going to stop them coming from the United States. That's just crazy.
Well, it does. The way you put it, it certainly does. And I would like to know. I would like to know more about it. But I really appreciate the input, and I will go look into that because I had not heard that story. Any other things come out in that document dump that you know about? Oop, guess John has left us. Well, thanks for giving us a call, and I hope you will join us again. 244-1777 or 1-877-291-8255 is the number right here on WDEV. Be happy to hear your point of view. May not agree with it, but that doesn't mean I don't welcome it. Jean from Barry, good morning to you.
Good morning.
What's up?
Oh, I'm just about that guy that just called.
Yeah, what do you think?
You know, I brought this up in church one time when they're hollering about these refugees. We're all refugees, you know.
Yeah, I think you're right.
And so he's hollering about the ones coming in. What about his ancestors
mm-hmm.
that came in here?
Mm-hmm.
And what did they do to the Native Americans?
Mm-hmm.
Slaughtered them, took their land. And now we're worried about these ones coming in, what they're going to do?
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, maybe you go, you know, go by that example. Maybe I ought to be more worried.
They can build all the walls they want. Yeah. Bush built one too. It didn't do any good, did it?
Now, where was that one? Refresh my memory.
Bush did when he was president. He had a fence or wall or something built there.
Yeah.
They're digging underground. That's what they're doing.
Yeah.
And coming tunnels and coming out through that way.
Mm-hmm. So
you know, I don't see what the walls are going. And besides, another one said too. Let the immigrants come in, like you said, and I agree, because our ancestors and what were all immigrants,
mm-hmm.
you know, coming in.
Well, I mean,
and now we want to stop these from coming in. Oh, they're bringing in this or bringing. Well, what did the Indians say?
Yeah,
we didn't have any diseases till the white man came.
Yeah, no question. But so the other thing, the thing that I think really is the big argument for letting people in. And this is something I've just kind of come to in the last 6 or 8 months as I've become more and more aware of the Syrian immigrant and immigration crisis. The people who give up home, you don't leave home, as the poet Warshawn Shire says, unless home is just worse, worse than anything you could possibly imagine. And I can't remember the line of the poem. Of course, it's flipped right out of my head. But you don't pick up and leave the only place you've ever known. You don't put your children's lives in danger unless things are just so freaking awful that you can't possibly stay. And anybody who was willing to do that and willing to see it through and has the grit and the gumption to make it all the way here, I don't care if they're coming from Mexico or Syria or Bosnia or wherever, anybody who's got that kind of gumption and grit, we need those. We need that sort of person here. We really do.
If it, you know, what would we do if it's the same situation? You know, you got to stop and think.
Yeah. Now, I've been doing a little study. Do you ever do any family history, Gene? Do you ever study, look at like your ancestors or any of that stuff?
Well, a lot of them are ahead of time. I've got one from Ireland.
Yeah.
Ireland and, I'm trying to think of the other place. England.
Yeah.
And Johnson, that's Swedish.
Yeah.
Swede,
yep.
And French, and so
they all came.
We're
all
what
came
we call
somewhere.
Everyone no damn Yankees. You know, we're a mixture of different.
Well, that's true, and you know, my crowd's mostly Irish, and I've been looking at that recently, and it's just amazing what they went through. I had a fourth great grandmother who came to this country at the age of 15 by herself in one of those ships that was sent first to Quebec, and they all were in quarantine up there, and then she came down through Nova Scotia, eventually fetched up in Gloucester, Massachusetts. And I think about what I was like at 15 and whether I could have pulled that off. I'm not sure I could have.
Well, I've been told that some of my ancestors from way back came in, some of them on the Mayflower.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that wasn't a picnic. That wasn't a lunchboat cruise on Lake Memphremagog. That was tough going. Takes tough people to make that passage.
Well, you're darn right.
Oh, boy.
And I'm in my 80s, so I still have a tough time raising my children and stuff, but... You know, we made it with good Lord's help, and otherwise I don't know what I would have done.
I hear you. I hate to think of myself growing up in some of those places where they came from. Anyway, Gene, it's always wonderful to talk with you, and I appreciate your common sense point of view on these matters. And thank you very much for giving us a call this morning. Hope you'll call again. We're going to zip over to Duxbury where Bill's on the line. Good morning, Bill.
Good morning. If you run out of things to talk about, just talk about gun control or illegal immigrants, and your phone will be busy.
You know, I was just saying that to Tom. The minute gun control comes up, the phone rings off the hook here. You know.
Oh yeah, that's a fact. I've been listening. I wasn't going to call, but I'm going to call. I figure I got to call.
I like it when you call. What do you got in your mind today?
Thank you. Gun control.
Okay, let's hear it.
Let's say you get Sue Minter here as governor.
Uh-huh.
We're going to have a big problem. We're going to have a big problem because she's against automatic weapons.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Well, she can't do anything unilaterally.
Vermont has an automatic weapon. Mm-hmm. She calls it every automatic weapon an assault weapon.
Mm.
Okay. That's wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. Do you agree?
Oh, I know it's wrong.
Oh, okay. Okay. So you know what's wrong. So, number one, I do not want her as governor. Number two, you go into a restaurant, a movie theater. Somebody comes in with a semi-automatic weapon and starts shooting everybody, what are you going to do?
Get under the chair.
Is that going to help you?
I hope so. I hope so.
What if it doesn't?
Well, then I'm in trouble, aren't I?
You are in trouble. Mm-hmm. Now, what if you had a gun? What would you do?
I'd probably get under the chair and...
And shoot back?
I don't know if I would or not. That's a tough one.
If I had my kids and my wife here,
okay,
I would
that's different.
Shoot back.
Yeah, that's different. If I was by myself, not sure. I'd be more worried about hitting other people.
Even if I'm by myself, I want to save my life.
Well, I'd be afraid of hitting other people, you know what?
But listen. This is one thing where most people would be careful of anyway, they don't want to shoot another person. But if someone dies or two out of it, okay, better to have two people die than a whole movie theater. Is that correct? Nasty choice, but it's the same thing as at war.
Mm-hmm.
We're fighting a war now.
Mm-hmm.
If we would have fought ISIS, if we would have fought them the same way as we did in World War II,
mm-hmm.
we'd be under the Nazi flag and the red sun.
Mm-hmm.
Do you agree?
Well, not sure I could put it in such simple terms, but I think I see where you're going, and I think my general sense is I'm glad things worked the way they did as opposed to that. I'm hesitant to commit here because my own grasp on the history is not as strong as I would want it to be to say firmly. I'm getting flagged from the next room, Bill. I hope. Can you come back next week and we can pick this up because I think this is an interesting topic. We have to stop, though, and do a little bit of business because, my goodness, it's almost 11 o'clock already. Time flies here. We are Open Mic. We are WDEV, and we will be right back. Good morning and welcome back to the final moments of Open Mic for Monday morning, the 19th of September. Hester Fuller is my name. Been here with Tom McLeod since 9 o'clock this morning, and we're here until 11 o'clock this morning, at which time Bill Sayre will join us, join you. I will be stepping aside and giving over the mic to Bill Sayre and Rob Roper on Common Sense Radio, brought to you by the Ethan Allen Institute every weekday morning here on WDEV. Right now, though, we have time for just, we have had a slew of phone calls. This always happens when we bring up gun control. And we people are going to make a lot of people cross, and I'm sorry about that. We've got too many calls to take between now and 11, but we do have time for one more. We're going to zip down to North Carolina, and Rob, I'm going to tell you up ahead of time. I can give you just about 60 seconds, so let's hear what you have to say. What's on your mind this morning?
Lots on my mind, Hester. Good morning.
Good morning.
Gun control. I mean, let's not forget about Hillary Clinton's famous statement at John Sicaro's fundraiser back in September of 2015, where she said the Supreme Court is wrong on the Second Amendment. And quote here, I am going to make that case every chance I get.
Mm-hmm.
So I think
Trump
phobia over gun rights and accusing Hillary of wanting to take your guns away, there is some basis in fact.
Well, in fact, the thing she's worried about, the thing she faults the Supreme Court about, is the business of ignoring the idea of a well-regulated militia. That's the piece. She's not saying she's going to take your guns away.
Well, I know, but she wants to interpret the Second Amendment as such. And so if you do, and amendments can be made, if she can make the point that the revolutionaries were mainly concerned about a well-armed militia against...
No, a well-regulated militia, not a well-armed militia, a well-regulated militia. The Founding Fathers realized that these were weapons of destruction and death, and they weren't just saying, let's let everybody have one randomly. The idea was to support a well-regulated militia.
So you agree with Hillary, it should just be a militia?
A militia is a people's force. So, I don't have a problem with calling it a well-regulated militia, but I think, responsible people keep in charge of it.
If I'm not part of an organized militia, I don't have a right to have a gun.
If you have it for self-protection, you are basically part of, a force. Uh-oh, there's my 60-second thing. Oh, darn. Well, listen, Rob, this is not the last time we'll take up this issue, and I look forward to hearing from you again. Again, my apologies to the folks who are on hold right now. It seems like every time we uncork this keg, we just get a flood of calls, and maybe we'll do this again soon. I hope we do. Thanks so much for listening to Open Mic. I'm Hester Fuller, and I will be back next Monday, I do believe. Right now, though, I'm groping around here trying to find my little list of wonderful places you can hear tremendously good local radio, WDEV News Radio, broadcasting to you from Waterbury, Vermont at AM 550, broadcasting from Warren and Waitsfield, top of Sugarbush, FM 96.1, from downtown Barrie at 96.5, and now from Montpelier, clear as a bell, 98.3 FM. If you're up in the kingdom, listen on 101.9 FM in Island Pond, independently owned airwaves. News coming up. Thanks a lot for listening, and we'll be back next Monday.
The Open Mic Podcast is brought to you by Hickok Boardman, Dennis Ricker, and Brown.
Find us online at hbinsurance.com, and you're always welcome to visit us on Facebook, in Vermont, online, on the phone. Hickok and Boardman Insurance Group. We are here when you need us.